Several years ago, a young man named Manazeh Tisha B'Av, I heard an incredible thing from the Rosh Yeshiva Rav Aaron Lapiansky. He said that Rabbi Chaim Bar Weissmandl once said, maybe more than once, after the Holocaust, he said that the Holocaust affected German Jews, Polish Jews, Eastern Europeans. He said there was a major difference. Many German Jews were killed, but those who escaped, those who made it out, often escaped with their property, with their money. He said Eastern European Jews, Polish, I'm not sure specifically who he's referring to, when they escaped from nothing. They had to rebuild from zero and begin it wherever they went. Why? Rabbi Weissmandl said, because the Germans had a sense of yashrus, even when dealing with non-Jews. The gelt was kosher gelt, and they kept it. The Eastern Europeans often behaved differently, and that's why they ended up with nothing. Rabbi Chaim Bar Weissmandl was a man who experienced the Holocaust and survived like nobody else. He was psychologically damaged for the rest of his life by what he had seen, by what he had lost in the Holocaust. Some people might have been desensitized to the rights and entitlements of non-Jews, especially the Germans. Rabbi Weissmandl was the opposite, apparently. He understood that there's still such a thing as yashrus, even when you're dealing with non-Jews, even when you're dealing with anti-Semites. Incidentally, they tell about Rabbi Weissmandl as well. Rabbi Avram Israel, a rabbi in Brooklyn, says he was once traveling with Rabbi Weissmandl on a train, and they saw cows that were pacing uneasily on the side of the train tracks. I'm a city kid. I wouldn't know what it looks like for a cow to be pacing uneasily as opposed to easily. They were agitated. They were pacing fast. Rabbi Weissmandl said, you know why they're doing this? Because modern factory farming deprives them of the ability to mate, which is the normal habit of animals, and it stresses the cows out. Then perhaps, Rabbi Weissmandl said, we drink the milk, and that's why we have an increase in depression with Manazeh. Rabbi Weissmandl was sensitive to Germans, to Europeans. He was sensitive to cows as well, apparently. But certainly when it comes to human beings, everyone is created with Tzelem Elokim, and we have to be sensitive to the rights even of those who are not Jewish, even of those who don't like us. They're still human beings, and they still have certain rights. We're going to discuss today the question of how halacha expects us to act toward non-Jews. So there is a halacha component. There are questions of gezelakum, of tozakum, of avedazakum, of bimateanakum. There are all kinds of questions involving what types of honesty halacha expects from us vis-a-vis non-Jews. And the halachas, we have to be honest, the halachas are not entirely the same as they are vis-a-vis Jews. There are certain differences in halacha. However, there are also ethical or meta-halachic considerations that go beyond the technical halachas of Gezel and Afshos of Eda and so on. And we have to remember, it's the same Gemara, the same Rambam, the same Shulchan Aruch that talks about the technical halachas also commands us with regard to these other considerations as well. Certain considerations of Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem and Yosher. It's not two separate things. Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem are not just considerations of Musar, of Hashkafa. These are halachic considerations. They're in the Rambam, they're in the Shulchan Aruch. And the point I'm making is that we are going to discuss certain technical differences, distinctions between the way halacha treats Jews and non-Jews. Most of these distinctions perhaps are more theoretical than practical, especially again in today's world with the media, with the transparency we have today. Especially in many scenarios, there will be considerations of Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem. That is really the alpha and omega of our discussion, and therefore, we're going to repeat this over and over and over, that the bottom line is that in many cases, regardless of what the technical halacha would be, one has to act with honesty, at the very least, because of questions of Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem. The Gemara tells us an incredible thing. The Gemara Yevama says, in Sefer Shmuel, it says, toward the end of the Sefer, it says there was a terrible famine in David HaMelech's time. Hashem told them the reason for this punishment for the Jewish people is because of what Shaul had done. He had committed some type of terrible crime against the Gibonim. El Shaul, El Beis Hadamim, Asher Hamas, Asa Gibonim. Shaul had killed Gibonim. It's not clear when and how he killed the Gibonim, but Shaul had killed Gibonim, and they were being punished for this. David asked the Gibonim, can we propitiate you? What do you want? So the Gibonim were hard. They were unrelenting. They said, we don't want Kesef, we don't want Zav, we want blood. We want blood revenge for what Shaul did to us. So David went ahead and he executed seven members of Shaul's family for what they had done to the Gibonim. it seems these were not the people who were actually committed this atrocity. Whatever it was, this was years later, these were people who weren't even born yet. The people Dovid executed were not those who were responsible. So the Gemara says, what kind of business is this? The Torah itself says, it's one of the Yumsu Abbas Albanim, or Banim Yumsu Alavas, Ishbachetu Yumas. The person's not responsible for the sins of his fathers. So how could he kill these people? So the Gemara says something incredible. The Gemara says, better that we should uproot a letter in the Torah, better that we should kill innocent people, rather than perpetuate a Chil Hashem. If we don't do anything, if we say the perpetrators are dead, we can't give you justice, the Gevonim will grumble, people will grumble and say, the powerful get away with things, the Jews do what they want, there's no accountability, there's no punishment. If the only thing we can do is kill innocent people to avoid that perception, the consideration of Chil Hashem is so great that we can be Oker Eros Hachas Min HaTorah. We can completely change the halacha when necessary to avoid Chil Hashem. This is not the kind of thing that we're going to be recommending that we do in practice to say we can kill people to avoid Chil Hashem, but this shows how incredibly sensitive the Torah is to Chil Hashem. So anytime someone is thinking about doing something not honest, we heard about the New York Times test. My wife is a federal worker. She says in her office it was the Washington Post test. Any action you take, think about how you'll feel if it's the subject of a muckraking article in the Washington Post. And therefore, anything that could possibly result in a Chil Hashem, we have to do our utmost to avoid. The Gemara in Yoma says there are several different categories of Averis. Sometimes Tshuva is Mechaper, sometimes Yom Kippur is Mechaper. When it comes to Chil Hashem, that's in a league of its own. It's the Pasuk says, in Yeshaya, I think, in Yechupar ha'avon hazeh lachem ad temusun, this sin shall not be forgiven until you die. And therefore, Chil Hashem, again, is not something that we can trifle with. Anything that can result in a Chil Hashem is out of the question. And that takes us to the first aspect of the halacha. As I said, this is halacha, not just mussar. That takes us to the first aspect of being honest or not being honest with non-Jews that I want to discuss, and that is Chil Hashem. The Tosefta says that stealing from a non-Jew is more serious, in a certain sense at least, is more serious than stealing from a Jew because of Chil Hashem. It says if a person steals from a non-Jew and swears, perjures himself, swears falsely, and he dies, he does not receive atonement. He's not miskaper. Even though the Gemara in Yoma says the Misa is mechaper, when he dies he has a kapara. Tosefta says the person dies, he still has no kapara. It's even worse than stealing from a Jew because of the issue of Chil Hashem, because of the desecration of God's name. We say that it's a terrible, terrible avera. Anything that causes a Chil Hashem, again, is usur. The language of the poskim is usur, b'makom she'yesh Chil Hashem. It's usur, you're not allowed to do it. It's just as usur, it's more usur than anything else that would be usur because of gezel, like gezel from a Jew or anything else. When you're dealing with non-Jews, if there's a Chil Hashem, it is absolutely usur. The Gemara Bava Kama, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, indeed invokes the question of Chil Hashem. The Gemara there brings various opinions. We'll discuss this in more detail soon. The Gemara discusses gezel akum, stealing from a non-Jew, toz akum, a non-Jew makes an error in your favor, aveda zakum, a non-Jew loses property and you find it. The Gemara discusses all these things, and the Gemara says explicitly that whatever possible heter there might be is when there is no chil, is when there is no issue of Chil Hashem. When there is an issue of Chil Hashem, again, usur, it is absolutely usur. And that's the first thing we have to say. Again, that can be the alpha, the omega. I'm going to repeat this many times because it can't be overstated. That's the first point we have to understand, that there's an isur gomer, whenever there's Chil Hashem. Moreover, sometimes not doing the right thing, not being honest, might not result in a Chil Hashem, but being honest will result in a Kiddush Hashem. If the other parties are not aware of what's going on, but if you make a point of being honest, we all read those stories, a person found a desk he bought and he found cash inside and so on, a person who does something honest, even if they never would have caught him for dishonesty, but if by being honest he creates a Kiddush Hashem, then he has done a tremendous mitzvah of making Kiddush Hashem. And this goes back to a famous story, actually a group of stories in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi relates that Shimon ben Shetach, his students once bought him a donkey. They bought him a donkey for business use, commercial use, and they bought it from a non-Jew, and it turned out that when they bought the donkey, there was a jewel hanging from the donkey's neck. So they told him, Rebbe, wonderful, you're rich, you have a jewel now. You don't even have to work, you can just live off the value of this jewel. He said, give it back. Did you buy the jewel? No, you bought the donkey, he said. The jewel is not mine, go return it, he told them. So they asked, Is that the halacha? We'll discuss soon. If a non-Jew loses something inadvertently, is that the halacha? Do we really have to return it? So he said, he told them very sharply, he said, what do you think? Is Shimon ben Shetach a barbarian? Am I a barbaro? Am I a barbarian who takes things that don't belong to me? I'm not interested, he said. Shimon ben Shetach wants someone to say, blessed is the God of the Jews, that's worth more to me, that a non-Jew should say, blessed is the God of the Jews, that is more valuable to me than all the schar in this world, all the benefit in this world. I think I accidentally included Hashem's name in the citation of Yerushalmi, so treat the papers accordingly, please. But the Shimon ben Shetach said, it's more valuable to me than all worldly good, than all worldly schar, is that a non-Jew should say, blessed is the name of Shimon ben Shetach. Yerushalmi has two more stories in the same nature. They bought wheat from a certain general, a certain non-Jewish official. They found money inside. They returned it, as the brothers did to Yosef in Parashas Miketz. And again, the general said, blessed is the God of the Jews. Third story, there was a queen who went bathing and she lost some kind of jewel. They returned it. Then she said, I don't need it. I have many like this. And they said, this is what our Torah says. We return it. And she said again, she was impressed by the honesty, by the integrity of Jews. So these are the first two concerns, the twin concerns that we have. We have the terrible Aveira of Chilul Hashem, as the Tosefta says, as the Gemara Bava Kama says, that whatever possible heter one might have for doing something not totally honest when dealing with a non-Jew, that is completely eliminated when there's a Chilul Hashem. Moreover, even when there is no issue of Chilul Hashem, when you can make a Kiddush Hashem by returning it, then it is a great mitzvah, that it's a tremendous thing for non-Jews to say, blessed is the God of the Jews, which he will say if you return it to him as a matter of morality, of integrity, that is of paramount importance. Rambam says that it's a great thing to return things to non-Jews, so that Kadesh Shiyafaru Es Yisrael, they should glorify and venerate Jews, and they should know that Jews are faithful, men and people are trustworthy. That's a reza meshubach. That's not only strictly required, that's recommended, but if there's a Chilul Hashem, the Rambam says, if by not returning it, you would create a Chilul Hashem, that's out of the question. Of course, that is an absolute Isser, and you are obligated to return the property. So that's the first concern we have. It's a great mitzvah to make a Kiddush Hashem, and it's absolutely Isser to do anything that would result in a Chilul Hashem. That being said, putting aside for a moment these great considerations of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem, what are the basic halachas in the absence of those considerations of dealing with non-Jews? So we have several different categories. We have gezel akum, stealing from non-Jews, tos akum, the error a non-Jew makes in your favor, avedas akum, a non-Jew loses property and you find it. The halacha is gezel akum is usher. It is absolutely prohibited. Aside from any consideration, some posts can say the real reason is ultimately because of Chilul Hashem. Other posts can say absolutely not. Chilul Hashem is a separate concern, but gezel akum is usher anyway. Some say midaraisa, some say midrabanan. Gezel akum is usher. This is a halacha psuka in Shulchan Aruch. You are not allowed to steal from non-Jews, period, full stop. Gezel akum is absolutely usher. That's category number one. The other two categories, tos akum and avedas akum, in cases where you're not stealing, you're not actively stealing, somehow you end up with a non-Jew's property, here is where the Gemara has certain leniencies. Again, we'll discuss in our case studies more, we'll limit and point out that these leniencies are somewhat more limited than they appear at first blush. But here the Gemara does have certain leniencies with regard to tos akum and avedas akum, errors and property that you find. But again, even in such a case, even before discussing anything else, it's always going to be a Kiddush Hashem, certainly to return property that you find in these cases. Moreover, tos akum, we refer to it, we'll discuss actual concrete cases later, but tos akum, in its simple formulation, is where the non-Jew makes an error in your favor. If you induce the error, if you deliberately, consciously, actively manipulate him and cause him to make the error, that is more serious. According to many poskim, that's absolutely usher again, that's like zela. And some poskim say flat out that actual fraud is gezel as well. When we say gezel akum is usher, we don't just mean robbing a bank or picking a pocket is usher. Post can say, if you bill, again, we'll discuss concrete cases later, but if you bill for services never provided or for merchandise never provided, that's not toast, that's gezel. White-collar crime is gezel as well. Many post can say this, many post can say any kind of deliberate manipulation of the non-Jew to induce him to error is going to be Gezel Akum. So once again, Gezel Akum flat out prohibits a great deal, many forms of dishonesty vis-a-vis non-Jews. Certain other forms, there may be technical basis for leniency, but again, we'll discuss the practical applications of this later. Now there are a few other considerations before we move over to the practical examples. A few other points I want to make as well. There's a principle in halacha called dina de malchusa dina. That means that the law of the government is recognized as valid by halacha. Halacha incorporates, validates, and incorporates certain aspects of sovereign law, of secular law, into halacha, even when halacha wouldn't say that. There's a lot of debate about the scope of this principle, but certain things are universally accepted. The government has the right to levy taxes. Taxes are legitimate. When the government collects a tax, that is a legitimate obligation you have to the government, recognized by the government, recognized by halacha, and you have it's a legitimate claim. It is not theft. The Gemara points out that when the government collects taxes or exercises principles like eminent domain and takes private property and builds public infrastructure with it, if we would not view the government as having a legitimate right to that property, you couldn't use it. You couldn't walk on the road. You couldn't walk on the bridge because it was built with property the government took from citizens without their consent sometimes. So we have to recognize the government has the right to collect taxes. Therefore, the Gemara goes so far as to say tax evasion is prohibited. And the Dina de Malchusa Dina in general is a uncontroversial principle. The government's obligations are legitimate. Your obligations to the government are legitimate, recognized by halacha, and you have to fulfill them. Moreover, there is a remarkable idea proposed by Chirashai, the Rav Shlomo Yehuda Tabak, in the 19th century. It's endorsed by some contemporary poskim as well, that all the discussion in the Gemara about non-Jews, that's when it's strictly a matter of non-Jew. The only person here is a non-Jew. When you're dealing with a modern government that has Jewish constituents as well, so there are Jewish stakeholders in government. The government takes revenue from the citizens in the form of taxes and so on, and does things for the public. It builds infrastructure. It provides police and water and sewer and stuff like that. So Jews benefit from that. So if you would steal from the government, that's not a question of stealing from non-Jews. That's a question of stealing from Jews. If you have a partnership of some Jews and some non-Jews, and you walk off with some of that partnership's property, you have just stolen from Jews. Some of the money you stole was from Jews. So once again, that's outright theft and nothing to talk about. This is a chiddush, but this is what the Chirashai says, and this is what some contemporary poskim say as well. He actually makes this point from two perspectives. First, because since the government revenue benefits the public, therefore you're stealing from the Jews because the government has less revenue with which to provide services to the public. And second, because they're going to have to raise the tax burden. If the government has less money, they have to make that up somehow. That means more revenue is going to be extracted from the tax base. You're infringing on the rights of Jews. You're causing their taxes to go up. This is another point to realize, and this obviously applies to corporations as well. We might think of a corporation as non-Jewish. Walmart is not a Jewish corporation, but there are Jewish shareholders. They're directly through mutual funds, through index funds. There are Jewish shareholders. They might not be the majority, but there are some of them. So again, this is another factor to consider that when we say non-Jews, many cases that might look like non-Jews really have Jews involved as well, because modern corporate structure, modern governments really involve Jewish interests as well. And this is another argument, again, to limit the applicability of the leniencies of the Gemara regarding Tohu Sakum and Aveda Sakum, the leniencies to not return lost property or to not return something that was erroneously given to you by a non-Jew. Again, very often there are Jewish interests as well. Furthermore, there is a doctrine of the Meiri, or Menachem Meiri, one of the great Rishonim. He writes in several places that whatever Chazal said, whatever invidious distinctions the Chazal made between non-Jews and Jews, those all refer to pagans, to barbarians, to people who had no sense of civil behavior, who were barely different from the dumb brutes. He says they were not talking about civilized, law-abiding, God-fearing, Christian, modern non-Jews. Again, modern, he was writing in the 13th, 14th century. He said, this does not refer, he says in several places, this does not refer to the non-Jews that we have today, who are civilized, who are religious, who are moral, who are upstanding, who behave in a righteous and honest way, and therefore we treat them exactly as we treat Jews. The Meiri is not brought in Shulchan Aruch. The Meiri is ignored by many poskim, but not all poskim. Many poskim, including a number of major poskim in the last couple of centuries in particular, have adopted this Meiri as normative, at least with regard to Lechatchila. Marsham says that he always, even if the Meiri is not strictly lahalacha, he's accustomed to always tell people that they should ignore the leniencies of the Gemara because the Meiri says they don't apply to modern civilized non-Jews. The Remeir Arik in his Milchas Pitim makes the same point. He says that the Sefer Chassidim, Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, writing in medieval Ashkenaz, said that a civilized Ger Toshav, we treat him like a Jew, we return his Aveda, we treat him just like a Jew. And Remeir Arik says, even though for certain purposes we don't have the formal process of Ger Toshav, which requires a Beis Din, we don't have that as Manazah. But Lav Dafki says, in this context, Ger Toshav means a civilized, law-abiding, religious, maybe even not religious, a civilized, decent person. So once again, this is yet another argument for setting aside some of the leniencies of the Gemara and treating contemporary non-Jews treating them very similar to the way we treat Jews. Now, before we get to our actual case studies, there are famous passages in the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol, and in the Be'er HaGola, one of the Achronim, Rav Moshe Rivkas. They both write that it's a terrible thing that people in Golos, again, back then also, people were desperate to survive, the anti-Semitism was so great, poverty was so great, Jews sometimes did things that weren't honest, and they're both very opposed to this. The Smag writes, I have been dorish this to the Jews in Spain and to other Jews in the diaspora and in Christian countries, that the reason for particularly during our Golos, we have to be oches, the seal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the seal of truth, not to be mishaker, not to be dishonest, not to Jews, not to non-Jews, not to mislead them in any way, he says, to make a Kiddush Hashem, to mekadesh atzmecha, even if something is mutter, she'eris Yisrael, la'yasu avlov, lo yidabru chazav, a pasuk in Tzfania, the remnant of Israel shall not do iniquity, shall not speak falsely, they shall not be found, la'imate b'fiyem, l'sham tarmis, falsehood, fraudulent words, he says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come to redeem the Jews, he will. They'll say they deserve to be redeemed because they're men of integrity. They're in the Torah's emes b'fihem. But if we behave to the non-Jews with ramos, with fraud, they'll say I don't understand. Because Baruch Hu, why do the Jews deserve to be freed? This is how they behave. Again, whether he means kiddush Hashem, whether he means something beyond that, an ethic of integrity. Either way, he says if we know what's good for us in Golos, he says it makes sense. The right thing to do is to be honest, and he feels this is something that needs to be publicly stated. Be'er HaGola as well writes in several places in his notes to Shulchan Aruch. He says Jews must be honest. He downplays and sets aside various halachas in Shulchan Aruch that allow leniency. He says in one place, in one particularly memorable passage, he says, "Ani kosev zos ladoros." I write this so everyone should know. I've seen many people who were dishonest. They were initially successful, but it wore off, and their business failed, and all their property was lost. I've seen many others who were mekadesh Hashem in significant ways, not just giving back $10, but who gave back substantial amounts of money, who did the right thing, who were mekadesh Shemayim, and Hashem caused they were successful, and they left property to their heirs. My family, Rav Yisrael Reisman, likes to point out, Baragola did not have an easy life. He was running, I think, from Tach V'Tat. He suffered at the hands of brutal, murderous European anti-Semites. And Afo became, he still recognized, like Rav Eismandel, a person still has to be honest. A person still has to recognize that Chosama Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, a person has to be honest, even where the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, allows some leniency, there still is this other powerful imperative to be honest, and you will be the better for it in the long run. So with that, we can turn to some of the practical questions.
So we're going to start off with something that probably happens more often than you think. Okay, classic situation. So my company received a shipment of a greater quantity of merchandise than we ordered due to an error solely on the part of the seller. Sounds familiar? Sometimes we order things with Amazon and all of a sudden we get something we didn't expect. What is the obligation? Do I have to notify the seller? Do I have to return it? Can I keep quiet? I didn't cause any of this, Rabbi Grossman.
So, again, the first issue, of course, always is, is this error likely to come up? Will it likely be discovered at some point by audits, by accounting? If they discover it and they realize that you it was substantial enough that you clearly knew about it and didn't return it, that would be a chil Hashem, certainly. They would not be happy with you, and then of course you have to return. Even if they will never discover it, it's a small error, it's a rounding error, they'll never discover it, and they won't, even if they do discover it, they'll easily believe that you didn't realize it. Then there might not be an issue of Chil Hashem, but it's an issue of Kiddush Hashem. If you can return it in a way that creates a Kiddush Hashem, then that's a great mitzvah to say that you gave me extra merchandise, but I want them to say, Baruch Elokei Yisrael. If neither of those things apply, people talk about, in an Amazon case, you're not going to talk to a person, you're going to talk to a computer, it's never going to reach the attention of any human being, in some cases it won't even be resold, it'll just be dumped if it's a cheap item. In that case, you're technically not mechuyev to return it, and again, there's no Chilul Hashem, there's no Kiddush Hashem, you didn't cause it, and it's a simple case of Tohu Vohohu, and there's no way of being Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, then indeed, there still are some posts who seem to indicate, perhaps, there are stories they tell, that it's always good to train yourselves in habits of honesty, and so on, but the Ikar Adin in such a case would be you don't have to return it, once again, but that's assuming you didn't cause it, and assuming that Chas V'Shalom, there's no issue of Chil Hashem, and assuming that you aren't going to make a Kiddush Hashem by returning it, which may sometimes be the case. But if not any of those apply, then obviously you should return it.
But I mean, that's a hard line with respect to how do you know if there is a Chil Hashem? I mean, there may be circumstances, I can tell you personally, where you can call Amazon, for example, and you're going to say, listen, I got this package, I got these goods, or there were extra amounts that I ordered. Or, of course, I didn't even order this. Give me the return slip, and not a problem, I'll be glad to return it. And they say, no problem. I guess the point is that when the person tells you, no harm, no foul, can you trust them?
So this is a complicated question, and this really is a question that comes up with Jewish companies as well. You can speak to a Jewish company, you can get a secretary, a call center person who's an authorized agent of the company, Jewish or not Jewish, and he tells you it's fine. The question always is, are they sufficiently authorized to make the decision? That's a complicated question. It really needs to be answered in terms of a specific context, understanding the corporate structure and so on, a little bit beyond the scope of our talk. But those are the general principles.
But isn't the theme then really that ask your local rav, what do you do under these circumstances?
Yes, asking is certainly a good idea. As we heard earlier today, as Rabbi Lopiansky said, the Choshen Mishpat tends to be very, very fact-dependent and very, very complex, and we can discuss the general principles, but yes, that's exactly right. The point is, in many individual cases, which are gray areas, then a rav should be consulted, because you have to understand the facts, and you have to be able to apply the halacha to the specific set of facts.
So, sometimes, for example,
let's say in your case of Amazon, they don't know I'm Jewish, they don't know who I am, I'm going to call them, it's not a Chil Hashem, but it's also, I'm supposed to tell them, hi, I'm Jewish, okay, I'm going to return it.
So people often ask not face-to-face, they're not going to, your name might not mean anything, they're not going to know you're Jewish. So I've had this case myself occasionally, and certainly if you're doing it in writing, by email or something, as Yushalmi said, a person can say, this is the law of our Torah. So if you're writing an email, if you're doing something online in writing, certainly you can word it, hopefully not too awkwardly or clumsily, you can write that as a Jew, it's important to me to behave with integrity, and therefore I would like to make an effort to return. In a case where that's not possible, so again, if there's no Chil Hashem, you're not strictly mechuyev to. If you want to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, you have to do your best to try to figure out if there's some way that you can. If you really can't, again, if there's just a box you have to check, there's no line to any explanation, no one's going to read it. If it's really not possible to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, then if there's no Kiddush Hashem, there's no Kiddush Hashem, and you're left with the Ikar Adin that you're allowed to keep it. Except again, there is this idea that some poskim seem to recommend that it's good for a person to train himself in honesty. That the Gemara doesn't really say that, but the Ikar Adin certainly in that case you could keep it.
Before we get to the next question, sometimes, for example, there's such a thing that, you buy something, you actually use, cash, and you may get some change. You walk out of the door, and next thing you know, you've got an extra $5. Am I mechuyev to then go back in and do it? He made a mistake. He counted it out. He made a mistake. Could you imagine the Kiddush Hashem you can accomplish by going in there and returning it. And I've had situations where it actually happened, and the guy said, I can't believe this. That, you know, there's actually honest people in this world.
Now, it's just, what about the Nigiri? That's not coming up in this discussion. Of course, the Nigiri, I think that's a mile off that anyway. Then all of this doesn't even sound even better, because you're treating like it's not none of the issues of Akum apply.
Yes. So the point is that we mentioned the Meiri says that all the discussions of the Gemara that treat non-Jews differently from Jews don't apply to Zman Hazeh, to our non-Jews. And it is true. Some posts can make this point. Rene Arik, one of the Gedolia posts of a century ago, says that you have to return an Aveda to contemporary non-Jews. He says, and again, Europeans of a century ago, Christians or whatever Europeans he was talking about, he says you have to do that. And that is an opinion, that there are some contemporary posts who follow the Meiri strictly as well. Other posts can focus on the Meiri more to argue that you shouldn't be dishonest, that you shouldn't... The problem is that the Meiri is not really brought in the Shulchan Aruch. The Stimas Halashen of many, many poskim is not like the Meiri, so it's hard to argue that the Meiri is a strictly of Mikra. And I have heard there are some poskim, Rav Cook, I think, held this way, the Meiri is at least to a certain extent is Mikra. Then Rameir Arik says this specifically about Shavas Aveda. There are poskim who do, and that is a good point. I should emphasize that that's yet another reason to return the Aveda, even in a case with no Kiddush Hashem, to follow the Meiri. And the Marsham says he encourages people to do this. The Marsham is focusing mostly on not being dishonest. Yes, the Meiri is another good reason to return it to the non-Jew as well as this thing we mentioned about corporations possibly that have Jewish ownership as well. But Mikra Din, it's not clear that you have to strictly follow the Meiri Lala.
Okay, next question, please.
So I have a situation where I was returned a check which I shouldn't have been returned. So I called them and I paid the amount and they agreed, okay, yes, you should have paid it. But then someone else looked at it later on and they sent it back again, and this keeps on happening. I mean, what's that?
I have that usually with the IRS. They're constantly returning money, no.
This is with the doctor.
So I should mention, again, it's difficult to relate to a specific case. I don't know how the industry works. But I should mention, there is another principle in these halachas, and that is the principle of kach dinchem. The Gemara says, when you deal with a non-Jew, you're allowed to operate based on the rules of prevailing law. Even if halacha has a higher standard, if the law clearly says that this is legal in this context, you're allowed to tell it to a Jew, you have to follow halacha, except in cases where din malchus adina can supersede the halacha, which are limited. But with non-Jews, the Gemara says explicitly that you have the right to tell a non-Jew, kach dinchem, this is your law, and you have no right to demand that I follow the higher standards of Torah law. So in cases like this, where, again, I don't know the law, again, you have to consult someone who, A, knows the law and understands the situation, and a rav who can then apply the halacha, but this is another heter that applies in certain cases of dealing with non-Jews. If the law allows you to do what you're doing, then you don't have to say, I want to be... Kim Kaishim Shemaim is always a good idea. But if it's not going to be a Chil Hashem because it's perfectly legal, you made a good faith effort and they can't get their act together, you have to ask a lawyer. You have to ask someone familiar with the law. But if that is okay according to the law, to say, I did what I could and I made a good faith effort and I'm done, that would be another heter to allow you to just leave it alone after a while.
If I can just share with you a quick war story. I actually had that. I was joking before, but I'm being very serious now, where a client received a six-figure check, a refund check, and the IRS was wrong. A client called me and said, what do? I said, let me call the IRS. I explained it to them. I said, this is erroneous, because there are specific rules in the Internal Revenue Code when it comes to erroneous refunds. And we told them that. And they said, we're right. And they sent us a letter that said, we checked the account and you're correct. Excuse me, we're correct. You can keep the money. So I told the client, I said, listen, I said, you've got a letter here in your file. The problem is that you want to make the Kiddush Hashem. So what do? We actually sent it back. And guess what happened, ladies and gentlemen? With interest. Okay? I told the client, wait, okay? I said, hold on until the statute of limitations expires, and then you can keep it for sure. And that's exactly what happens. Okay? What can I tell you? Yes, basically, sir.
Could it be a shiloh of chumra as the kula?
Meaning?
If I do a shavuos aveda by to a good.
If I return it.
He doesn't know I'm Jewish. Doesn't the Gemara say shavuos aveda will be also by good?
Yes. So the Gemara does say that not only are you not obligated to return an aveda, lost property, to a non-Jew, it's actually usur. And there is a potential usur. However, The first point to acknowledge is that the Gemara explicitly says that Tamikai Hashem Shemayim is mutter. Now, your question was, what if you're not sure it's a Kiddush Hashem Shemayim, or what if it's not a Kiddush Hashem Shemayim? So, the second point is, we mentioned the Ber HaGola in general is very pro-non-Jews in these contexts. Ber HaGola points out that according to the Rambam, he says the reason it's Aser is because you're Machzikei De'Ovrei Avera, because you're aiding and abetting Rishus, and because the non-Jews in Chazal's time were barbarians and pagans. Doesn't apply today, he said, again, because our non-Jews are well-behaved and civilized. So the Ber HaGola explicitly writes out that Isser as part of his general program of encouraging honest behavior toward non-Jews. Ber HaGola explicitly writes that out of the Shulchan Aruch. It's similar to the Meiri. Meiri is much broader. The Meiri says none of the invidious distinctions apply today. Ber HaGola says at least this specific Isser of returning the lost property doesn't apply because they don't have the status of Ovrei Avera. Beyond that, we mentioned that the idea is to Mekadesh Hashem Shemayim. Poskim in general, my understanding is, poskim in general allow the returning of lost property even if you have other ulterior motives. Even though it sounds like it's a serious isser of the Gemara says it's usser, this kind of isser is similar to the isser of just making the Gemara says not allowed to give a gift to a non-Jew, a gift for no reason. Poskim generally assume that if you have a reason, even if it isn't a lofty religious reason, enlightened self-interest, you want him to take out your garbage better if you give him a gift now, that's not even a gift, it's a quid pro quo in general. So certainly, if you have a real reason that you're doing it, my understanding is poskim in general are lenient. So if your reason is if your genuine reason is a hope to Mekadesh Hashem Shemayim, even if you're not sure that it might not work out, they might not be listening to you when you say you're Jewish, so you're right, it's not entirely clear, but my impression is that you don't have to worry about the suffix isser. If your motive is good, this particular isser of returning the property to the non-Jew does not apply. Rashi has a different reason for this, sir, and it's a question which reason is considered the picker. But yes, but potentially doing it for no reason at all, but to make a moral statement that I think it should be returned, contrary to the Torah, that is potentially an isser. But my understanding is post-gim, again, in the case where it's clearly not a Kiddush Hashem, and there's no reason for doing it, legitimate reason for doing it, it's more of an issue. But generally, if you can do it with even, I think, a reasonable chance of making a Kiddush Hashem Shemayim, I think post-gim would generally condone it.
Yeah, one last question.
Okay, I'm just curious what Miri would say about the modern day guy who condones the LGBT community and other
stuff. I think that's beyond the scope of this one. You had a great question? No, but seriously, the world has become extremely complicated. I mean, a classic case that I get in my professional world is that why can't I do this? Everybody does it. Okay? And that's where I put a hard line. I really say, okay, that's nice. But if everybody picks up a gun and starts shooting, are you going to do the same thing? I said, you have to look at yourself in the mirror. And again, I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal and preach. But the fact remains is that as far as the halacha, the pure halacha in the Torah is, Niktashti, Pesach B'nei Yisrael, V'yisem Nikiyim. Okay? And that is the voice of Chalu Hashem Kachi. If you ask a Rav, you will see there's no line that differentiates specifically either a Kiddush Hashem or a Tzechil Hashem. And you have to know exactly what that means and how it manifests itself. And it's something that evolves and changes all the time. But the fact remains is you got to look yourself in the mirror as well and also say, could you imagine what kind of a Kiddush Hashem I can accomplish? And I really think that is the theme that we need to aspire for in all of our lives. Whether that's, for example, going way beyond over here, just in terms of, cutting the lines or things of that sort. You can't imagine the Kiddush Hashem you can do by just keeping things simple and going back to fundamental basics. And not just rely on the fact, well, everybody does this. And I think ultimately, at the end of the day, that will help bring much more shalom. Isn't that really the theme of what we're supposed to be doing during the 9 days? And while at the same time helping, to bring the Mashiach and Hashem. One last question.
Yeah, this is more of a principal question. As a tax accountant, Stu alluded to me, that tax law is not clear cut. There's always different accounts will read things differently. Is there an extra level that a yid has to have in terms of what they're willing to do because we're bound by Chil Hashem, Kiddush Hashem?
So,
or can I treat like any other accountant in my place would do?
So again, there are two dimensions to that question. There's the question according to the Shuras HaDin in terms of my obligations of Gezel, the Halacha, the Shulchan Aruch, I said both Shulchan Aruch, but the classic laws of Gezel, and then there's the question of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem that you mentioned in the question as well. So with regard to Chilul Hashem, I think there are really no rules. If that is how the perception is going to be, that if again, not returning an Aveda, for example, as one of the previous questioners mentioned, not returning an Aveda is normally, you're not supposed to return an Aveda, the Gemara says, at least in the Gemara's time. And yet, the halacha is, if it's a question of Chilul Hashem, you must return it. So that overrides any other halachic consideration. Even if it's halachically not the right thing to do, but if it creates a Chilul Hashem, you must do it. So I think there's no question, if given the social and political climate, it will reflect badly on Jews, whether that's fair or not fair, I would say that is an issue of Chilul Hashem. That, again, that's a factual question. Will fair-minded people or most people simply understand that you did what any other person would have done in your position? Any accountant would have given the same advice. Any lawyer would have given the same recommendation to the client. So if it won't be a Chilul Hashem because people recognize that that's what everyone does, then they're not. But if it will be a Chilul Hashem because that's the way the world works, I think it's an issue. With regard to the Ikaret Din, though, about a Jew has to be careful about Gezel as well, without the question of Chilul Hashem, then, like I said before, I think you have the right to say that if the law would allow this, if this is called a good faith effort to comply with the law, it's a gray area, and a lawyer will give me this advice, and that I think would be okay, assuming there's no Chilul Hashem, you're not mechuyev to go more than the law would require you to do in such a case.
And does the answer change if the client is Jewish or not?
If the client
is Jewish.
You mean that the party was going to be injured by your...
Take a tax position for a client. Does it matter if the client is... Does the answer change if the client is Jewish or the client is not Jewish?
So the Chilul Hashem issue, I mean, if it's his name in the paper, it's not a Chilul Hashem. If your name's going to be in the paper as well for having given the advice, if you're a prominent enough figure in the case, then it's a Chilul Hashem, obviously. I think it's just, you know, more a question of common sense than anything else, whether it will reflect badly on Jews. In general, this is a topic for another day really, but in general, a lawyer, an accountant, does have certain responsibilities of lifnei iver l'seitei michshol. Advising a client to do something which is usher for that client itself is an iser for the professional, and that itself is a question whether if we decide it's usher for him, whether it applies to non-Jews as well. Again, you have certain responsibilities not to do that.
Okay, I think we're coming to a close, and if you have any questions more further after this, please come up. Otherwise, thank you very much, and we appreciate your time and your efforts.